Sheba of reel number six.
Right. Well, eventually along came the crucial evening. I might say evening because Woodhouse and his Pontius planned to do this thing as late as possible, as late as they reasonably could, in order to give Pontius plenty of time and ability to get away, a bit of dust to get away in, although it made it more difficult for the from the flying point of view. Nevertheless, off they set. And the rest of the story is we saw them take off, and as far as that was the story as far as we were concerned. And then the clock ticked over, and the clock ticked over, and nothing happened, and nothing happened, and nothing happened at all. And it became, eventually, we put out some flares, somebody had a bright idea of putting out some buckets of petrol. You mustn't forget that night flying arrangements were not known and practiced at this time. And the idea of putting out some buckets of petrol was a bright one, which we carried out. Later on, we went out and fired berry lights off the ground into the air for a long, long, long time, until at last we decided that that was the end of poor old Woodhouse, and that was that, and we went to the mess to bed. That was the end of story. A couple of days afterwards, Woodhouse appeared. What had happened was this. He'd found a place to drop Pontius in, and he'd come down as steeply as he possibly could in order to get down as quickly as possible without giving people time to accumulate on the ground they were making for. And Pontius jumped over the side as arranged. Woodhouse beat it up to the end of the field and started to turn round, and his engine stopped. His engine stopped, as it appeared afterwards when it was all reasoned out, because he had come down so steeply that he had oiled up a couple of plugs. And so Woodhouse was a chap who was always ready for emergencies. He'd always got this leather ball of string and everything else in his pocket. He was out of the aeroplane, stuffed his gloves into the air intake and started swinging the prop wildly, trying to get the thing to start. And he got it going in three or four cylinders. The 90 RAF engine is an eight-cylinder engine. He got it going in about half a dozen cylinders, and that was that. And so he was taxiing wildly around the field with the idea of trying to burn up the oil, which was in the other cylinders. And along started to come some field-grey people in uniform, some soldiers. There's only one thing to do, is to see if he could take off. He took a dart at the longest run he could, at the lowest piece of hedge he could see, just managed to scrape over it, and plodded away. But he was still on six plus cylinders, which was no good for trying to get home on. So he searched around for a bigger field some distance away from where he was and deliberately sat himself down in his other field and proceeded to do an engine overhaul. I don't mean that perfectly seriously. I mean he proceeded to take the cowling off, which was necessary to get out the plugs, take his plugs out, clean them, and put the plugs back, swing the prop, and she started, and he was working in eight cylinders. By this time, this had eaten up so much of his time. You must not forget that there were no night flying arrangements. The only place in the whole of France which had a light out was us at home. He hadn't the faintest idea where he was. The only thing that he could see going on were the very lights coming up from the trenches. And so he did the reasonable thing, which was to fly west, and to make certain he was on the correct side of the lines until his engine gave out, till his petrol gave out. What else could he do? Which is what he did. And he landed, I can't tell you where he landed, but it took him a couple of days to get home from there with nothing worse than a grazed ankle or something of that kind, and a large appetite for half a dozen days' leave, which had been promised him for doing this job. This incident is very interesting, really, because it's a very, very, very early stage of spy landing, not spy dropping, spy landing. But it started Woodhouse into this particular line of country. And he was used to develop the process of spy landing and then spy dropping And he was in the spy business. He was the kingpin of the spy business right until the end of the war.
Second interviewer, Martin Bryce.
Mr. Chabot, I understand that in about October 1917, you flew a Bristol fighter on what was probably the first night flight of that type. Could you describe that particular
Yes,
flight?
I could, but there's one or two things that lead up to it. When one starts recounting anything, it's awfully difficult to know just where the recounting starts. And this, my connection with the Bristol fighter, starts a long time before the actual occurrence. I had been invalided home from Mesopotamia with a... very, very nasty septic state of some kind that I'd got from the BC place, and into hospital in Eaton Square with a lot of heavy carving work, which the surgeons did. Then when I came out from there, the first station I was on was... they sent me down to instruct at Bewley. You know, Bewley, where they now have the Motor Museum and that sort of thing, which wasn't there in those days.
Yes. May I ask a point there? Whereabouts was the airfield in relation to the village of Bewley?
Ask me another. Yes, I couldn't place it. I'd have to, if I went down to Bewley, I could probably place where it had been. But I couldn't recollect the details of it. Mind you, we're talking about some little bit of a considerable time back. We're talking about 1917, 27, 37, 47, 57. Nay, we're talking about 50 years back. And I don't think I can place the village streets at a distance of 50 years.
Could I also ask you there, if I may? I believe that Lord Montague of those days, always with an interest in things mechanical,
yes,
had quite a bit of interest in aviation. Did you ever see him at the airfield?
Not as far as I can remember. But I wasn't at Bewley a very long time. I didn't enjoy the thing very much. To start with, we were instructing, and a couple of uninteresting machines to instruct in. One was a DH-6, and the other was a Curtiss Jenny. I disliked the Curtiss Jenny very much. DH-6, I don't know if you know the DH-6, a very interesting machine. It was the one which de Havilland made with the idea of mass production. It's the wings, instead of being rounded ends for the wings, as wings normally have, were absolutely square. The whole jolly thing was square, so that you could take a port outer wing and stick it on the starboard lower wing, and that sort of thing. But it was a bit of a heavy, same old 90 RAF engine, but it was a heavy bit of work and not very interesting. And on top of that, there was a boyfriend of mine that I had, awfully nice bloke, a little chap called Van Gotem, that I had learned to fly with at Brooklands back in 15. He was down there too, and we were flying together one day, and he suddenly went on fire just underneath me and just went down. Of course, we'd no parachute in those days. And my little friend Van Gotem caught it, bought it. And on top of that, I was one of the few people who knew his girlfriend in Bournemouth or somewhere. And I had to go and break the news to his girlfriend. Altogether, Bewley and I didn't get on very well together. Now, it happened that I was up in town on leave one day. This is where the connection with the Bristol fighter starts, although it's rather a roundabout one. I was in town up for a day's leave one day, and the thing to do in those days were, if you were on leave, you did not go in uniform, you always went in civvies. And so I was wandering down as an ordinary civilian down Cheapside when a raid started. And here's another interesting thing, that actually I think, now I'm not certain of the date of this, but it must have been in the summer of 17. And raids hadn't become a very serious thing in these days because everybody crowded out into the street. They didn't take cover and dodge it as they did later on. Everybody crowded out into the street to watch these things. Down Cheapside and into King Street, which leads down to the Guildhall, and a bomb or something or went off right over the Guildhall. Got myself rather troubled over this because I was standing in a knot of people, and having had quite a bit of experience in chucking bombs and things myself, it seemed to be very bad luck that somebody chucked a bomb at the Guildhall and it had gone off 200 or 300 feet overhead. Very disappointing for the chap who'd thrown it. And I couldn't help saying, "Oh, bad luck," which got me into disfavour with the other people that I was standing around. And I saw that I'd said quite the wrong thing and had to make off. Anyhow, the point of all this really is that it started going into my head an idea, and when I got back to Bewley that night, I put in an application for transfer to London Defence, which eventually came off. And the first station I was on London Defence, was North Weald. 39 Squadron, I would say. I think it was 30. I'm practically sure, yes. At North Weald, which is just the other side of Essex. Just the other side of Epping. And there the London Defence started. Now, London Defence, as far as we were concerned, the raid which had started the whole ball rolling, the one which I'd seen in Cheapside, that had been an aircraft raid, not a Zeppelin raid. But the London Defence stations had been originated with the idea of tackling Zeppelins. And so we were not at all fitted out for tackling. We'd only got 2Cs, I believe, 2C or 2E, I'm not quite sure which we had at North Weald. 2E, very likely. We were not at all fitted for fighting as far as aircraft, Gothas, and that sort of thing were concerned. And so we were really anti-Zepp squadrons, the original London Defence squadrons. Now then, one of the fairly early things that happened at North Weald was a big Zepp raid night. I'm under the impression that it was 9th of October. In fact, it was 9th of October. And I was out on this raid night in a 2E. And you mustn't forget there was no ground communication whatsoever. The only possible way of picking up any idea of what was going on was watching around the sky for Archie bursts and searchlight beams and that sort of thing, trekking around the sky. In any case, I located Zepp, not only a Zepp, but 2 Zepps. I located 2 Zepps by reason of following searchlight beams or Archie shell bursts or whatever, somewhere up in the round Hartford. And so I trekked up there to see what I could do. Now then, I was right on the top of my climb.
Were you on your own, may I ask?
Oh, yes.
An observer?
On your own. The reason we were on our own, was that our lift wasn't so frightfully good and climb wasn't so frightfully good, and we'd got to be on the job as soon as we could possibly be. And so we were there on our own. And a 2E or a 2C is frightfully bad from any kind of a fighting point of view. You mustn't forget this, that in the very early Zepps had been attacked by going overhead and dropping a bomb on them. Eh? Whether we carried bombs in 39 Squadron, I just wouldn't, at that time, I just wouldn't absolutely remember. But I do know that as far as I was concerned, I had a gun of my own special contrivance. I've got a weakness for contriving odd things. I made a clip onto the cowling just in front of the pilot, into which I clipped the pistol grip, the grip of the Lewis gun, and some wire bracing which took the nose of the Lewis gun, and at an angle which just cleared the top of the prop. That would say your line of flight 20 degrees, 30 degrees, something like that, up from your line of flight. And in the circumstances which arose on this particular night, with myself at the absolutely top of the climb, say 12th thou, you were jolly lucky if you got 12th thou, and the Zeps 2,000 or 3,000 above, two of them, side by side, I don't mean quite side by side, but two of them working together, break off for a very interesting thing that subsequent to this... Woodhouse would land, and when the machine had slowed down sufficiently, you mustn't forget the most important thing which keeps on cropping up. No brakes at this time. No brakes at all. Brakes didn't come for years and years. When the machine